until 11, Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And joining me on the line now is Fiona Patton from The Sex Party. How are you, Fiona?
I'm well, thanks, Mitchell.
It's great to have you on the program. And first of all, I guess, what is The Sex Party? I was speaking to a few people about what was coming up on the program, and I said, The Sex Party, and there were a couple of raised eyebrows.
Yes, we do tend to get that. A bit less these days, I guess, because we're 4 years old now. Mm. But we're a political party, and we're registered federally. So we've run in 2 federal elections, and we're also registered as a state party in Victoria. So this will be our second registration, our second election in Victoria. So fundamentally, we're a civil libertarian party that wants to keep governments kind of out of our bedrooms, out of our pockets, but at the same time create a more civil society.
Yeah, so I guess if you wanted to describe what you stand for in a nutshell, it would be those libertarian values.
That's right, libertarian values, but recognising that we do need a safety net and we do need government involvement. So not that complete libertarian that sort of no taxation, no welfare, no government funding of any sort. We'd like to see government funding in certain areas, but we'd also like to see tax breaks for small businesses and less government intervention in our lives.
Yes, I guess you have policies on both sides of the spectrum, which is sort of the social side and the economic side. Is there any one side that you think is sort of a cause that you're more focused on?
You know, I think by addressing some of those social issues, you can really address some of the economic issues. And while we, you know, as governments have just been very traditional in how they collect tax and possibly how they spend it, I think it is time for, and particularly smaller parties like ours have got the flexibility, to think outside that box. So, for example, you know, we would look at something like cannabis, and that, you know, a lot of people in Australia use cannabis, a lot of people in Victoria use cannabis. Now, we spend an awful lot of money regulating the illicit use of cannabis, and that means taking people to courts and sometimes sending them to jail, trying to do education about the negative aspects of cannabis. But we would suggest, why don't you treat it like alcohol? We know alcohol has got, you can use that dangerously, but you can also use it safely. So why not treat cannabis like that? We estimate that Australia, we could raise $5 billion in tax just by regulating it and taking it out of the criminals' hands. And that money could be spent on huge infrastructure for this country.
And to play devil's advocate, I suppose, if we were to legalise cannabis, is it likely that the rate of use would increase?
Well, that's the interesting thing. Where we've seen cannabis, and we're not, I'm speaking very separately from medicinal marijuana, because I think that's a very different issue, but on this issue that of legalising it like we legalise alcohol, it has, in the countries and states where this has occurred, they've seen a decline. You know, I mean, interestingly, Holland, which has had a legalised cannabis use for many years, has got the lowest use of cannabis in the whole of the EU. Colorado, which legalised the recreational use of cannabis and the sale of it, they did that in January. Where they've seen the decrease in cannabis use is amongst young people.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of counterintuitive that when you make it available, you actually see the use of it decline. And that's because we can educate more thoroughly about it, and we can regulate and restrict how it's sold. I mean, today, a drug dealer doesn't care if you're underage when they're selling you some marijuana. But if it's regulated and legalized, and someone's paying a significant license to cultivate and sell that product, they're very cautious about who they sell it to.
Now, you said that there's a distinguishment between medicinal marijuana and obviously recreational use. What do you think that is, and how would that change from a legislative point of view?
When you are prescribing a medicine for someone, and generally speaking, when we're talking about prescribing medicinal marijuana in this country, we're talking about prescribing it to very sick people. People with very severe epilepsy or with terminal illnesses. So you need to make sure that the product that you are cultivating is cultivated extremely safely, is cultivated under very sanitary conditions. You can't have, you can't create a medicine that you don't know the strain that you're using, you don't know the strength of the product that's been created, you don't know whether it's been contaminated with molds or things like that. You really need to, you need to grow it under medical conditions. And that's very different from someone recreationally using a product. So those are the sorts of things. And it's also, when you are treating someone with a product, with, if cannabis is being used as a medicine, you really need to control the dosages and you need to control what strains are made available to which patients.
And you talked about sniffer dogs at music festivals. I guess that's why we're sort of speaking to you today, or at least it was the catalyst for starting the conversation. What are your thoughts on police using sniffer dogs at music festivals?
And this goes back, I guess, I'm opposed to it because apart from the fact that everybody, even the police, acknowledge that sniffer dogs get it wrong more often than they get it right. So they're not an effective resource. We can spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on sniffer dogs at music festivals over the summer period. It won't stop people taking drugs. What it may do is stop people taking drugs safely.
Mm.
People are going to take drugs at music festivals. We all acknowledge that. And sniffer dogs are not going to stop that. But what we have seen them do is see people panic when they see the dog and maybe, you know, take all of the pills that they've brought for their friends or whatever it might be, and overdose or have a very adverse reaction to it. It means that people start acting in a less safe manner. So, you know, while sniffer dogs are incredibly ineffective in catching criminals, they may actually have the opposite effect of making it less safe rather than more safe.
Mm. I mean, when you say that sniffer dogs are unreliable, do you mean that they're giving out false positives?
Yes, and I believe it's just, I think the New South Wales police found that it was almost in 80% of the searches that they did were false positives. So, I mean, even if they randomly went up to people, they would have a greater success rate.
Mm.
Yeah, so example, in 2010, they conducted 15,000 searches and 4,000 people were nearly 16,000 searches, 4,000 were found to be with drugs. So that actually gave them a false positive rate of 74%.
Right, there you go. And I suppose the question is, do we actually want to see reduced drug consumption at music festivals? And if yes, what would you do to try and reduce the consumption, or would we just sort of let it go?
Look, I think, you know, we have to acknowledge that humans have used drugs since the beginning of time. And we yes, one day it would be lovely if nobody used any drugs whatsoever and we were all very happy within ourselves. It's not reality. It's not going to happen. But if we want to reduce drug use, the way we do it is by regulating it. You know, the one drug that is in decline in Australia is tobacco.
Mm.
And that is because we educate, we tax, and we regulate. And that's how we see successful reductions in that. If we, you know, if you outlaw it, then you walk away from taking any responsibility to it.
Mm. And the Victorian state election is coming up in about 67 days' time. Mm. And you guys are going to be running candidates in Victoria?
Yes, we are. We're running candidates in all upper house regions. So every single Victorian will have an opportunity to vote for us. We don't, and we're also running in some lower house seats. We'll be running in some of the lower house seats around Geelong, the seat of Colac.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be running in. But I think, you know, we're not trying to make government, unlike the Greens, unlike probably Palmer and the others. What we're trying to do is provide a significant voice on matters that are important and matters that maybe will get, you know, glossed over by the major parties. So one voice in that upper house can make that real difference, whether it's drug law reform, voluntary euthanasia, even things like speed cameras. I mean, we can make a significant difference just by having that one voice in there.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested to hear what your views are on some of those issues that you say are being sort of glossed over by the major parties. Like, I mean, speed cameras, that's something that a lot of Victorians are quite passionate about, isn't it?
Yeah, and so they should be. I mean, we're not using speed cameras to save lives. We're using them to raise money. And
yep.
I don't, you know, and that's what Victorians are furious about.
Mm.
You know, if we know that, in fact, traffic light cameras, so red light cameras, actually do save lives because they stop collisions at crossroads. Speed cameras generally raise a lot of money. Now, there is, if we can find evidence where the speed camera is actually saving lives, great. But I think until we do that, there should be a moratorium on speed cameras until we look at where they're being placed, and they should not be used to raise revenue.
Well, there was recently a campaign done by the state government which talked about speed cameras, and it talked about how speed cameras save lives. And there was a survey done before the campaign and afterwards, and it found that the campaign didn't really change people's views. In other words, the campaign didn't seem to persuade people that speed cameras were being used for other purposes other than revenue raising.
And seriously, I mean, and you look at the the statistics on it and the evidence of before and after speed cameras, and the evidence is not there. You know, you can run all the publicity campaigns you like on this, but the evidence does not show that. And you know, I know it's slightly radical, but I would also reconsider some of the speed limits that we have on our roads. Yeah, you know, we have some of the best roads in Australia and around the world, and yet we put some very low speed limits on them. And maybe it's about we need speed limits when there's a high level of traffic on those roads, and maybe we can reduce that, we can change those speed limits when there's less traffic on those roads. I'm not a traffic expert, but I do think we do need to question this, and I do think we need to question whether speed cameras are being used to save lives or just to raise money.
A lot of that is sort of music to my ears as a motorist, that's for sure. And I, as I said, I suppose a lot of Victorians would be in favour of that. But I guess what are some of the other state issues that you would like to see a bigger voice on?
Look, I think we're missing the boat on public transport.
Yeah.
We really need to put infrastructure into public transport. And you know, if you're a motorist, you should be supporting that as well, to take cars off the road, to give people another viable option. And at the moment, for so many people, public transport is just not a viable option. You know, none of us want to spend 3 hours on public transport to get to our jobs. So it's not, or to get to school or whatever it may be. So really, we could spend some serious infrastructure money on public transport, and particularly on the weekends. I don't know about you, but I know that if you've had a late night out, there's no way you can get public transport home.
Mm.
So, you know, what we do see, and I certainly hear reports from nightclubs in the city telling me that people actually stay longer than they want to, which then can affect their alcohol intake, their drug intake, and how they, you know, and violence on the streets, because they can't get home.
Mm.
So 24-hour transport, at least on a Friday and Saturday night, you know, if we just had trains running once an hour on all the lines, that would get people home safely.
So the main thing that we should be investing in for public transport is just increasing the frequency of services.
Look, I certainly think we do need to do some new lines, and we need to build some new train lines, but certainly by just increasing the frequency now, that would be an immediate relief, and it would fix certain problems. It wouldn't fix everything, but it would certainly help out right here, right now, and that's something that we could easily do.
And just before I let you go, one of the people that listens to this is a very big fan of your work, and he had a question. He wanted to know what your thoughts were on the current performance of our federal government. I mean, you can entertain this question as you want, but any thoughts?
You know, yesterday I tweeted that the Australian government has introduced 61 pieces of terrorist legislation. We actually, more than even America, has introduced. Now, we are pushing this notion of fear and terror in our community when I don't, and we are overdoing it. And I think, you know, I'm cynical enough to think that this government is using the very real threats to overstep the mark on security and overstep the mark on infringing on people's civil liberties.
I mean, that's an important thing to talk about. This is the big issue at the moment, balancing civil liberties versus that sort of security argument, and we always talk about it on this program.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Q&A last night, but that really talked about that debate, didn't it?
It certainly did. And, you know, you can foster fear by increasing security. You know, if you start telling everyone that they have to take their shoes and socks off and that they have to, you know, basically, and then go through a sort of an X-ray camera to get on a plane, that really increases people's sense of fear.
And, I mean, that came to a head with those police raids in New South Wales. I mean, did you think that that was something to be concerned about?
Well, what did we see? 800 police officers raiding 25 places, and one person was arrested. The police took in 4 video cameras and 2 still cameras so that they could shoot it from all angles and provide that footage to the media. They also, they also tweeted that they were about to do this so that the media could also come and do it. Now, if you're trying to keep people calm and not alarmed, that's not what you do. You don't film and then distribute footage of 800 police in riot gear raiding houses at dawn and arresting one person.
And that was what Media Watch was also alluding to last night.
That's correct.
Well, Fiona, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I wish you all the best with the upcoming state election.
Thanks, Mitchell. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Yes, likewise. Fiona Patton there from the Sex Party, and I did say before Fiona came on that she certainly was a very effective spokesperson for their cause, and I always say don't let the name deceive you. And you may not support all the libertarian views, but there was definitely some common sense stuff in there in the lead up to the state election.